In the team white that you're about to watch, you'll see that I've got an image there of a man with his arm at various angles. That comes from Alfred Schaefer, and it relates to the possibility that he's going to end up in jail for having done a Nazi salute. And so the question is, at what point must your arm be in order for it to be a Nazi salute? And of course, the whole idea is actually very ridiculous, and so this meme mocks it. What happens if you are swimming? Maybe when you're swimming, you are carrying out a Nazi salute and you should be arrested. And, you know, there are many other possibilities. What if you get up in the morning and you stretch? You know, maybe you're performing a Nazi salute. Maybe your left arm doesn't know what your right arm is doing, and so forth. All of this is just a bunch of crap brought to Germany by Jews. So a German living inside Germany cannot do a Nazi salute, and there are all kinds of things he's not allowed to do. But it's him living in his own country where his own ancestors have lived for thousands of years. And the more I look around, the more I see that Jews are changing the behavior of all whites everywhere so that whites don't do what they should be allowed to do. There are things they're not allowed to do in their own country, which is part of their own history. And we in South Africa are in a similar position. We've also got illegal things, like we cannot use the old flag from apartheid. That is now illegal. If you have that in public, then you're committing a crime. All of this is just a bunch of crap brought on by Jews and liberals. So here's the show.
Hello and welcome to Team White. I'm Alex Linder, and with me today we have Monica Schaefer and Alfred Schaefer and Jan. And I'm back. I missed the last one. I want to profoundly apologize for that. But these guys stepped up and recorded themselves. I hope you've heard it. If not, we're all back together here, and I think we're still in May, so this will be our May Team White. We got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, so let's get right into it. The first thing we want to talk about is Alfred's personal tangles with the nasty thought police and Jewed out criminal sector and criminal police in Germany. Alfred, in Europe, what can you tell us and tell us, you know, that we need about the political totalitarianism in Germany these days and Europe generally?
Well, we can tell. Okay, for my own personal battle with this tyranny, I am in two days from now. I'm facing a trial. It's the second level, the higher level court for something that happened in the prison while I was there, and it is sort of I cannot in any way take it seriously, although it is serious when they can throw you in jail for something as trivial and nonsensical as is the case here, and it is the symptom of the absolute tyranny that we are living under, when a particular group of people can be singled out to be brought before the Inquisition and thrown in the slammer while everybody else can do whatever they want. And the reason what I'm standing trial for is because when I was in prison, I was in isolation mode. And I was there with just an Afghani and an Albanian guy, and I was telling him why I was in isolation mode. It's because of this silly mask nonsense that they were imposing on us, and I was not cooperating with that. And then I told him why I was in prison, and I told him I was in prison because of my dog, my jumping dog. And I told him because my dog likes to jump this high. And then the guard saw that, and he says, "Hey, that's a Nazi salute, blah, blah, blah." And he actually reported that, and that was the reason for this court thing. And I really cannot help but believe that this is actually just a way for the regime to keep as sort of a dialogue going, because they have a million other things that they could charge me with that are considerably more serious than what I did in that courtyard in prison. So I cannot give you any further explanations of why it's taking place, but it is taking place. But it is evidence of the absolute tyranny that we are under, and this is this regime that we have to overthrow with whichever means we need to overthrow it. Okay, back to you.
Okay, interesting. So, well, I don't know. Jan, any questions about that? Or
yes, Alfred, so if you now go into this court, you're going to try to appeal. The previous court said 6 months jail time, and you are trying to appeal that now. So you don't know. I assume this is a serious... A serious hearing that you're going to. Do you think it'll last a day? Do you think it'll require more than one court appearance?
I don't know. I cannot say. And what I'm going to ask, I want to focus on having them explain to me, first of all, how they can take a gesture that one makes and define that as an anti-constitutional gesture or something like that. And is this what grown-up people, you know, adult people do? This is absolute arbitrary nonsense and tyranny. And I could say, you know, in my final word, I could say I can talk for days if need be. But I'm going to just take it, play it by ear, and see see how it plays out. And if they then tell me I need to. I'm assuming that they're not going to arrest me right in court and throw me in the slammer. So then they would eventually send me something. I'm supposed to appear at the prison by such and such a point in time. I would, under no circumstances would I go there. I would wait for them to send their special squad and to pick me up or something like that, because this is total arbitrary tyranny that we are living under right now. And they know it. And I know that in the regime, too, that there are elements that they know that's game over, and so I can't make any more statements on that now. And if I'm, you know, I'll let you know after my Thursday appearance what has come of it. And yeah.
Okay, so I mean, you are right-handed, I assume.
Yes.
So if you are right-handed naturally, and you just happen to move your arm in a certain way, how can they prove that has suddenly got a political connotation to it? Is that the kind of angle that you're going to go for? Because that's not unreasonable.
Well, I'll tell you, and I have to give you an example of just to show you that how absolutely insane, absurd this whole accusation is. There is a doctor, a professor or a doctor who had been who was working very intensely to expose the Corona COVID Jew jab, the kill shot campaign there, where they're trying to inject everyone with this bioweapon, you know, calling it vaccines. And this guy he has an amputated right arm. It's amputated like at the elbow. He can't even raise his right arm because he's only got half of an arm. And they actually went and accused him of doing a Hitler salute. I mean, it's just bizarre, because instead of attacking, you know, like they didn't know how to take him out of business because he's just exposing the criminality of this mass injection of the population with rat poison. So they accuse him of doing a Nazi salute, but he can't even do one physically because he doesn't have a right arm.
God.
So it's completely insane. We are living in a state of total criminal insanity. That is what this regime is. You cannot. There's no talking around that point. It is total criminal insanity.
Yeah, because the thing that I'm getting at is that, you know, maybe somebody is doing something or talking, or you're chatting to people And maybe you do something and somebody can say that gesture, oh, he's just done a Nazi salute. And meanwhile, it wasn't, and it was by accident. Do they have a photograph of you doing it?
No, it's all...
So then it's hearsay. Where's the evidence?
Exactly. Yeah, and it really is. And the length, the expenses they are going through to pull this inquisition off, it's just bizarre. Because they really are.
If I may interrupt you, maybe you should say to them, where's the evidence? Where's the photograph? Where's the photograph or the video footage to show, you know, because you, how can you, first of all, this is just hearsay, and secondly, unless you have a video of it, you cannot say whether it was done by accident. How do you know I wasn't holding up both my arms? You know, there's lots of things that they can't say. It's all based on he said, she said, and it's, what, one eyewitness?
Well, that's the whole thing. Jan, this is so beyond anything that one could call, sanity. It really is insane. We are living in a giant and insane asylum. That's what we have. I understand all the points you're making, and that is the Inquisition nut house that I'm facing. That is it. In fact, the people that they had in the lower court there, all of them said, they said exactly what I had said. I was showing how high my dog can jump. There was no Hitler salute. I asked him, I didn't greet Adolf Hitler. He wasn't even there. It was not a Nazi salute. I was explaining how high my dog can jump. How can that be illegal? You know, it is insane.
Maybe you shouldn't even have admitted that you're telling them how high your dog can jump. You know something, I follow some criminal stuff, and I've been looking at a couple of murder stories where people have been, there's this one guy in America who went and stabbed some people to death, and they found his DNA here and there, and I suspect because he's white that they're kind of like really focusing on it. But then I look at that, and then I think, now, look at how that guy who's a murderer, And the evidence against him, there's mountains of evidence against him. And then I say to myself, you know, in a criminal court, they've got to prove, the emphasis is on them to prove that you did it. And the one thing I remember from my own chats to my lawyers was rule number one, deny everything. Deny everything that they ever accuse you of. Deny everything and make them prove every single point. And then every point that they come up with, you tear it to pieces in every conceivable way. Because I think about this Nazi salute thing, and I think that, and I'm actually wondering if a person could not get out of it. And never admit to anything. Put the onus on them. Tell them they must prove it. That's what I learned from lawyers. There's nothing the law can do to you if you deny something and it turns out that your denial is wrong. You have a right to deny. You can deny up to your eyeballs. And they can't later say, oh, you denied it, but you were found guilty. You have a right to deny everything.
In this case, or this is the nature of this tyranny, is that we should have the right. Theoretically, we have the right. But practically, the way this is now working out, if you are white, we are slated for extermination. This is absolutely arbitrary. These people that have the power to, you know, when they slam the hammer down with a judgment, they are like apparatchiks, or like machines. They are not human beings any longer. This is the reality that we are living in right now, and this is why. That's just why it will need to be overthrown by whatever means necessary. That's the situation we have.
So, Alfred, the same applies to the folks in court, that they are apparatchiks. They're not human beings anymore that are going to be thinking and reasoning. So they're not our friends, obviously. I mean, that kind of goes without saying. So to I think Jan's strategy is sound, because actually asking for the evidence is great. Like asking, you know, do you have a photo of this? Do you have a video of this? I think that's great. I'll just give a little example of another case that shows the ludicrousy of this and how if they want to catch you in something, they'll find a way. There's a woman in Sweden. She's half Swedish, half German. Vera Oredsen wrote a really good book about her childhood years in Berlin in the 1930s. She was born in 1928.
How do you spell that name?
I think it's Oredsen. I'm going to, when I stop talking here, I'll mute myself and go get the book and I'll confirm that. O-R-E-D.
Okay, I always like when we give people a little bit of obscure reference, because I've never heard of that. Let's spell it out. Just helpful.
Yeah, exactly. Oredsson. But I'm going to verify that for you in a moment.
Okay.
Because I don't have the book in my hand here. But actually, you know what? I have a letter from her, and it is Oredsson. And she was born exactly the same day as our mother was in Berlin, in the same area of Berlin. So when I proofread the translation of her book, which in English the title is When the Flagpoles Bloomed, something like that. Again, I don't have the book in front of me, but it's a wonderful book. She writes with humor and talks about those years, those glorious years when Hitler came to power and her childhood in Berlin. And I kept thinking, wow, this is probably similar to my mother's experience. She was born literally the same day, February 21st, 1928.
The title of the book again?
Again, I'm going to go get it and I'll tell you in a moment.
Oh, okay.
Tell you about is When the Flagpoles Bloomed, but that's in the English translation. Yeah, so I'll get the book and tell you more about it in a moment. But she was at a gathering, and I'm not even sure if she was one of the speakers or not, but the powers that should not be, they wanted to silence her. They wanted to do away with her. They just wanted to, you know, destroy her, basically. And some photographer caught her in a photo when she was actually waving at somebody. Like she saw somebody in the distance in the crowd and just raised her arm to wave at them like we do. It's just a natural movement of the arm. She was actually just raising her arm to wave at them, not to do any kind of a salute, like the old Roman salute or the Hitler salute, whatever they want to call it. She was literally waving, but the photographer got her just when the arm was at that right level. And then they charged her with that. This was in Sweden. I mean, that's how ludicrous this is. They just will try anything to bring somebody down. And then some arm gesture where she literally was not doing that salute. She was waving at somebody and raised her arm. It went even higher than that, but they happened to catch it at that, what is it, you know, certain angle that you're forbidden to hold your arm with an open palm.
Totally stupid, eh?
Yeah.
But anyway, one thing is that any kind of right-wing rally, I remember when we met in D.C. and the largest one that had been put together by Billy Roper, this is 20 years ago, we got off the parking. There's a parking structure three, four stories high. The top, there was not only was there a bunch of police, there was a whole row of photographers, many of them looking very Jewy. So this is, as you saw with January 6th, they love to get all as many possible photos and videos as they can, because this was even before, you know, the widespread cell phones and the video and everything. And then they can go back through it at their leisure and document literally every single person who is willing to oppose them in public. And yeah, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. They can make up whatever crime they want after the fact to bust you, even if it's literally like years later. Even if you're not even a racialist, they've got 1,000 of Trump's people in jail for that, you know, police-led, informer-led little tour of the White House. So this is political reality of how these things work.
Yeah, the government is the enemy of the people. That's how we can summarize all that. And so they will carry out their criminal gang activities to annihilate who they deem their enemy. And apparently they deem us to be their enemy, because the government, we all know who is running the government or who are the advisors, who are the puppet string wielders. So, yeah, they are the enemy of the people. They will do what they need to do to try to silence their critics or to outright, you know, put them out of service, basically.
Yeah, the media work with them. The media might as well be taken as part of the government now. For example, you just had this report come out as Durham or Dunham report. And, you know, it proves that Biden's a complete criminal and everyone around him is a complete criminal. And he was filtering money from Ukraine to like 10 of his relatives, $10 million, something like that. 9 relatives, $10 million, something like that. Completely proved. The media are just ignoring it like they have. So now we've absolutely proved that Hillary Clinton made up the lie that Russia was stealing the election and Trump was working with them, when in fact her people had illegal dealings with Russia. And then you've got Biden and all of them, basically all of these leading Democratic crime families that are semi-Jewish, semi-fronts for Jews, were making money criminally selling influence, and the media, the mass media, will not report on it. So that's kind of where we are. It really is totalitarian. And why doesn't the German government publish a graphic showing the illegal zone for raising an outstretched white arm and how long your arm is allowed to be in that zone as you're, you know, effectively doing something functional and non-political? So if your arm comes to rest for more than 1.5 seconds in the indicated zone, then you're guilty of a criminal gesture.
But Alex, even if it does not rest for 1.5 seconds in that forbidden zone, as illustrated by the case against Vera Oranson, they could do the type of photography where the camera is on speed, you know, the shutter speed. They just keep on taking many pictures, and then they take the frame that just happens to be where the arm is at the wrong place.
To talk about it rationally, that's just they're going to do whatever they want to oppress their enemy.
Can I say something? Right. Just like all of this absolutely arbitrary tyranny that we are suffering under, that all fits into the line of behavioral code that we find in the Talmud that says the best of the goyim deserve to be slaughtered. Because when you have arbitrary, nonsensical, so-called laws, which are nothing more than blots of toner on paper, that can take out people at your whim, then fulfill the line of code, the best of the goyim deserve to be slaughtered. And the best of the goyim for the Jews, the parasite Jews, are those goyim, those non-Jews who have figured out their lies. And by going from continent to continent over this planet Earth, they want to cull down the non-Jews to a point where they are just too stupid to ever figure out what the Jews are doing. But because the Jews themselves don't produce any actual value but extract the value that we produce by taking control over the money and writing the laws, this is the disease. This is a picture of the disease we are facing. And we, as a human beings, as the white race in particular now, because we are the best of the goyim, as it's defined by their own definition kind of thing, we have now got to overthrow this tyranny or we will die. We can talk about, you know, the silliness, the illegality of it and so forth. We can talk about that all day long, but we have to actually overthrow it, because they are not going to come to come down with reason. They will continue on the trajectory that we find ourselves on until we either overthrow them or we are dead. There's no other in between.
Yeah, yes, and that's exactly right. And there really isn't any competing explanation of how to deal with them other than, I would say, Catholicism, and don't harm them, convert them to Christianity. But this has 2,000 years of not working. And that religion was set up by the Jews themselves. And Marcus Eli Ravage, look him up, as I've always said, explains what the deal is. And you never find anyone dealing with that. Sort of the semi-good news, I won't go off on this, but maybe sometime, because I'm just starting to investigate myself, there's a hell of a lot of ex-Christians who are super into it. And they haven't managed to ever address that point of view about what Christianity is. They're still stuck on, you know, saying Jesus didn't exist or stuff didn't happen as Christians say, and they come from a literally intellectual PhD level background, but they haven't hooked onto the racial stuff. And this is a interesting thing to sort of watch, because it's kind of the last red pill, is that this Christianity was created by Jews, and it helps above all, it helps us wrongly define Jews as not a biological problem, but like a moral problem or a cultural problem. And just like we see that, you know, culture doesn't change what different species are. That's what we have to accept, that biology is the right way to look at things. And the main competition with that for white minds, for the minds of white skins who haven't accepted that they're white and that white values will even fight the idea that race exists, is that you either look at it from a cultural moral point of view, like the conservatives, the Christians, the Catholics, or you look at it from a biological view. And we are arguing that the biological view is far better, and history proves that. If you let Jews linger around, they're eventually going to destroy you. There is no Jewish question. There's a Jewish problem. But it has
very
a
well,
solution.
Yes, absolutely.
It has a solution. It's that's what Alfred just indicated.
Yeah, it is a problem, and yeah, you're right. The whole Christianity
all over the place. Yes,
the Christianity is a code of conduct for the parasite needs us to behave according to the Christian. You know, you hit me on the right cheek, and I'll show you my left cheek. You can hit me there too. I mean, and love your enemies as you love yourself. I mean, these are the Christian so-called values that are being indoctrinated into our soft brains.
And that contrast that with what you just said. They're saying in their Talmud, the best of the goyim should be killed,
yeah,
while they're sending out a Jew to be our God to tell us turn the other cheek and yeah, love your enemy.
Exactly.
If you love your enemy, you're going to be wiped out by it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a setup for our – it's like preparing us for the slaughterhouse is what Christianity is.
Yeah.
Back to your – oh, sorry, Jan, go ahead and I'll make a point just following what Alex just said.
Yeah, you kind of caught me a bit off guard there. That stuff about – that story of yours about the Nazi salute – I just want to go back, Alfred, I spent quite a lot of time going through a law book written by a law professor in America about how the best lawyers think. And I want to tell you something, that in the law is supposed to be properly defined, and crimes are supposed to be properly defined so that a crime is not subjective, that it's objective. So subjectivity is like how I feel. Oh, you hurt me. And so when you do things, when you got these hate crimes are like, oh, you hurt my feelings. But now you don't know what their feelings are. You can't prove what their feelings are. Whereas a normal crime is supposed to be objective. And that can be part of your argument. You should actually say to them, you know, where is your definition of a Nazi salute? What, just like your sister said, you know, at what angle, for how long, for this or for that? How do you know that somebody doesn't carry out a Nazi salute by accident? And like you mentioned, the guy with the half arm. But just returning to the Christianity and the morality, I must tell you that morality is gonna kill us. The more I look at all of us whites.
Look at your own state. You have whites running things. You have a civilization, even though whites are a small percentage, riding on top of a lot of blacks. It's in large measure not sanctions, not even the irritating attacks from the global media, but Christian morality that encouraged them to throw away what they had built. And they knew they'd built it. And the idea that everyone's created by God and somehow we can all live together. Well, we can't. Biology is real.
Alex, I totally agree with you. Biology is real. And by the way, I've got a video that you're going to love. I might as well quickly tell you about somebody that I've come across that you're going to like. I finally found a political party in South Africa that is exactly, Alex, it's 100% what you and I agree with.
Okay,
It is the Boerestaat Partij, and it's a tiny little political party, but it's been around since the 1990s, and it's actually exactly us. And they don't even talk about Nazis or anything, but they're actually true racialists, and they also are not Christians. And it's a tiny little political party. There's about 50 hardcore members of this thing. but it's got a very interesting history. In South Africa, almost nobody even knows they exist, but I came across them. Their leader approached me a couple of months ago, and about a month ago, I decided to get in my car and actually drive to him. I wanted to go and see all his stuff and assess him face to face, and I liked everything I saw. I could see that we've got a very intelligent Afrikaans man here, very intelligent, very capable. I dug into his history. I spoke to other people, found out more about his history. He's been around a long time. He's in his early 70s. His name is Koen Vermaak. And the Boerestaat Partij is actually fascinating. I've heard of it before, and almost nobody knows its history. But it was started by a guy called Van Tonner. And Van Tonner, just close to me, is the city of Randburg. Randburg used to be a farm, and Van Tonner owned Randburg. And when he sold Randburg, it made him a billionaire. And so Van Tonner then started this Boerestaat Partij. Van Tonner also married a Dutch woman. Her name was Adriana Stout. He married Adriana. She was actually, when she was young, she was a Miss Holland. And in South Africa, when she stayed in South Africa, she was a medical journalist for the Rand Daily Mail, which is a big newspaper, which was a big newspaper here. Anyway, Van Tonner even went personally to the United Nations to try and sort out something for a state, for the Boers, and it failed. I never knew Van Tonner myself. In fact, I've only now, for the first time ever, seen a photo of Van Tonner recently when the Boers start, when I asked the guys to get their website up again. So their website is up. I'm talking to their leader. I want to do some shows with him. He was around in the past. He was even in the AWB with Eugene Terblanche. He's even done some jail time himself, done 6 months jail time for something from back then. But very interesting guy, very nice guy. And the way he describes himself is, you guys don't know that much about the Church of Creativity. But you know Ben Claassen and the Church of Creativity. When Ben Claassen started the Church of Creativity, it spread from America to Britain. And it also spread to South Africa. And in the early 1990s, there was a Church of Creativity in Pretoria in South Africa. And it was run by a professor. And all of these, let's call them Boer Nazis, all my old friends, etc., some of whom have died now, etc., all of them went to the Church of Creativity in Pretoria in the 1990s. And so this leader, Koen Vermaak, he's a big believer and supporter of Ben Claassen and the Church of Creativity. And so for Alfred and Monica, you might not know that much about the Church of Creativity, but in a nutshell, Ben Claassen took Mein Kampf. And he basically took Mein Kampf and just made some slight modifications for Mein Kampf, for all whites, and for all white unity. And so that in a nutshell is the Church of Creativity. So so a thing like the white man's Bible is basically just another version of Mein Kampf, okay?
Yeah.
If I can just
go ahead.
Sorry,
go
I'll
ahead.
Just interject about Matt Hale, who I was in correspondence with. But now they've cut off all his correspondences to anybody except immediate family members, which is another arbitrary, bizarre thing for a man who's already spent, I think, just about 20 years in jail, and he's got a 40-year jail sentence. And he was, because he was, I guess you could call it a leader or a pastor in that Church of Creativity. So I do know a little bit about it, but thank you for your explanation about it, very succinct, and, you know, for the listeners who might not have heard about it. But this is how threatened the establishment, the enemy of the people, feel by those ideas, because Matt Hale was framed with a crime that he did not commit, and there was evidence that went clearly against their story and in support of him never ever having committed this crime. They've tried to frame him with soliciting the murder of a judge, and he actually is on tape saying to the guy who was trying to set him up to do this, no, I'm not going to do that. No. Like, this is all on tape. It's just bizarre and ludicrous how they actually threw him in jail and basically threw away the key. So that's Matt Hale in the United States, and he's still there without having any correspondence now. And that is a really, sad story.
Oh, that was a big deal back in the day, probably before you ever heard any of this. And they infiltrated some guy as head of his security, but it's even worse than that. Like, so the people on the jury, and I think the head of the jury, I can't remember who it was, but there was other people who ended up in jail because of this. It was completely an inside job. They fucked him over, even though he's literally on tape saying no when the guy was trying to get him to approve of violence. But the takeaway is, you got to be damn careful who you associate. And in general, be very wary of the phone. A lot of danger comes through the phone. But yeah, he got screwed. I think his mother died too. She was his biggest supporter for decades.
She did. Recently died, that's right. And yeah. Evelyn Hutchison.
Hutchinson. Yes, yes.
Hutchinson, I think.
I want to say, I'm gonna record those books. Someone had asked me to do that. So a class, and yeah, he had a non-Christian, he had a religion, Creativity. They got sued and they changed their name to, I think it ended up as the Creativity Movement. They used to be creationist or something, and the Jews ran around and found some tiny little insignificant church and claimed trademark. So then he had to change the name to the Creativity Movement, I think is what it was. Matt Hale was the head of it. And the point is, he was leading. Jews always chop the head off of whites. It's a mini Katyn forest, right? They take all the smartest Poles they can find, the professors and the heads of the military. They take them out in the forest, kill them all, blame it on Germans. And the media promote that lie, similar to the way they lie about Ukraine now. But then they also keep a scouring eye to watch developments among anyone who might potentially, with anyone who has money, who has brains, who has balls, right, to see if any of that popping up anywhere, and then let it grow a little bit and then chop it off. Even the Mao, the Chinese, that let 1,000 flowers bloom, was not for the sake of the flowers. It was to identify potential opposition to the Chinese. And, of course, they murdered tens of millions of their own people, the communists. Now, they've morphed today, but this is how things are. You got to be super cunning, super careful, but never don't be aggressive. Never live in fear. Live in intelligence and live in aggression and alertness. And in wisdom that we're helping give you about these various corners of the world and the global plot against our race and our people. Be smart. Be tough. Be
very
strong.
Very good.
All the good things you want to be. Be healthy. Be strong. Be rich. Be tough, right?
Yeah.
These are good things.
These are good things. And on that race, because you were talking earlier about the race question, and all civilizations of the past, what brought about their collapse was the miscegenation of their people. I think I've just been learning more and more about,
blood
the past
poisoning.
And history.
He called it Mein Kampf, blood poisoning. And at the same time, you have a Jew in one of his novels, Disraeli, and I think it's Coningsby or Sedona, saying that race is the hidden key to all history. So the Jew, Disraeli, is saying the exact same thing as the Aryan Hitler. And now Monica in Canada saying it.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, it is really true. That is the most important thing. And that's why the word racist is about the most weaponized term that there is, even more than Holocaust denier or any of those other deniers that they tag that word denier onto. Racist is the most weaponized of all the words because as soon as you hear that and you understand that everything is reversed and upside down in this world, then you go to the core of that. Why is that the most weaponized? Because blood is the most important thing that we have. That is what we have, is blood. Once that is erased or mixed or whatever, then it is gone, right? You cannot get it back just like that. So that is the most important. It's at the core of all of this.
then Aryans, you know, in China and India is probably one of the better examples, or you could even say Haiti, and they weren't even mixing in Haiti. They killed the whites, and they've been in poverty ever since, violence. They can't even let trees grow in Haiti because they have to chop them up for firewood. You've probably seen the graphics and the photos. But India, there used to be Aryans establishing and create a civilization, but when they start mixing with the low IQ locals, then the civilization goes away.
I can't help but think
this is why the Jews, ever since after the what we call the Second World War, have been so smug and gloating about being able to now reach the, you know, claim the throne of ruling this planet, because he says the white race has abdicated its place on this planet because they see how easy it was to get the best whites killing the best whites. And then they were already gloating about seeing the last generation of white children playing with white children, and that's what we see now. So we just had to take a little bit of time to get our brains softened up, to open the floodgates to the barbarians, and that is now the final act. And this right now is, in fact, the white race, the Aryan stock people, either stand up and deal with this, or it will be the end of civilization on this planet Earth, because none of the other races are come anywhere close to having the capabilities like we do to actually deal with this parasite. And something that gave me great hope just recently was a fairly young British woman, English woman. She was on Red Ice TV with Henrik there. Her name is Katie Fanning. And the way she was putting together how she sees this gave me so much energy, seeing, okay, now we've got younger people seeing it. And she was saying stuff like, when we will give the invaders, you know, like 6 months to get sort their stuff out and leave this our country, or we will take what they have, and then they will be they'll be put in camps and then be extradited. Like all the rules and laws that we see now will have no relevance after this thing tips. And there's so many other things that she also brought out that, and she also said, do not take our tolerance and our patience, and do not take that as a weakness. It is just, we will be completely different once we have the critical number who understand everything, and the anger is there. And that is happening right now. We already have the critical number of people, because people are waking up in droves, but they're just not yet angry enough. But it's happening. The people are getting up now. And the invaders, they know deep down inside that their time has come, and they are afraid, very afraid of when we do stand up. And then just one more last thing, and then I'll give you back a thing. The thing, Monica, you told me about Matt Hale, that really makes me want to cry, because this guy, you know, in the land of the free and the brave sort of thing, like locked up for that period of time, being framed for something and then being incommunicado, that is absolute cruel, the cruelest punishment. I mean, that is, because you know yourself, Monica, how valuable letters are when you're in prison. I know how valuable letters are. It's a lifeline to the world. And if that has been cut off from him, that's really tragic. I mean, that's, you know, in the land that likes to boast about having freedom of speech. I mean, what a, holy smokes.
Yeah, okay. It is. It makes me cry. I mean, it's unfathomable why and how they have, you know, decided to do this. And I think they want the world to forget about him or something. I don't know. It's just unexplainable. It's inexplicable.
Well, they don't want whites having any kind of leadership. And remember, Hale had passed the bar and they refused to give it to him because of his political views, even though intellectually he had done what he needed to do. So they're basically saying it's illegal to be pro-white and have any kind of professional capacity or any kind of corporation or in any way other than a private citizen shrieking on your own grass. And even that is pretty pretty questionable. So yeah, they're
The other thing about him that I didn't know right away in the beginning, but I know now, he was a concert level violinist. Now, do you think they're gonna let him have a violin in jail?
Right.
He has nothing. Sorry?
So this is an artistically and legally accomplished person, intellectually and artistically accomplished person who is leading normal white people in outer, I think, Peoria, Illinois. And he's only becoming, he's having public meetings in libraries. He's becoming more intelligent with time, getting more credentials, more experience. And they chopped him down pretty close to the professional start of all that. Throw him in jail
That's
for
right.
4 years. These are the people who are letting infinity murderous niggers commit crimes all
yes.
over Chicago and outer Illinois and St. Louis. Okay, so this is terrorism against whites, torture, terrorism, whatever you want to call it. It's absolutely racial humiliation and destruction visited upon our people by Jews, in line with, as Alfred said, with their religious doctrine. Their behavior and their actual doctrines are absolutely in line, and that's why you'll never hear anyone on Fox or any owned fake opposition channel ever cite that out of the Talmud. Even the best of the goyim should be killed. Well, they're effectively killing off Matt Hale.
That is so tragic. He's an absolute hero. And by God, we've got to see to it that, you know, like, well, this is turning now anyway. This is, I say, my bet is that he will be out of that place in a very short order, because this whole regime is now tipping. It's falling. And he people like him, they will be the new leaders, because they've, you know, I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he is a hero. He's heroic. What he's done is heroic.
Yeah.
He's written books while he's been in prison, so he's doing whatever he can with what he has, and that's a model for all of us. You can always do more than you think. Always.
Yeah, Matt
Hale. Go ahead, Jan.
Matt Hale is an awesome guy. I actually gathered some old film footage about him where you can see some of the things that he had to put up with. He actually had to put up with actual violence. They used violence against Matt Hale. I've actually seen it. I've got film footage of it. It's amazing how brave Matt Hale was. He was awesome. I look at a guy like Matt Hale and I say to myself, man, I wish a guy like him was living in South Africa. I wish we could get everyone out of jail and get them into South Africa. I'd like to see Matt Hale and what's our friend who was the last Rhodesian who shot those blacks. You know the guy I'm referring to.
I've heard you tell a story. I don't remember the name though.
No, the American guy, the young guy who went and blew away those blacks a couple of years ago. What's his name? The name escapes me now. You know his name.
Oh, Dylan Roof.
Yes, Dylan Roof. There are lots of... I wish we could get everyone here.
I thought
here.
You met in South Africa. No, he was in... I think he did that in South Carolina or something.
Yes. Anyhow, Matt Hale, a total setup. The guy who's doing his utmost for Matt Hale is a guy called Brandon Hall. He's the guy who's looking after the Free Matt Hale website, and he's putting out stuff all the time. It's Brandon Hall. So he's doing good work. I just want to mention something else that I've seen, and I just want to get back to the Buddhist art party. Quick thing that somebody sent me a copy of yesterday was I've got a letter that someone in America got from the SPLC. SPLC sent them like a freaking 10-page letter, and it was all about white supremacism and blah, 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 a whole bunch of stuff. So I've got a copy of it. I think I'm going to do a video about it.
Just say it's the Southern Poverty Law Center, right? You're talking about when you say an acronym,
yes.
It might be helpful to
SPLC,
just spell it out.
SPLC, yes, Southern Poverty Law Center. So it's a whole thing about white supremacism and everything. But I want to say something. When I look at a lot of what Jews are doing, Jews are clearly, you know, when they're carrying on about this white supremacism thing, they are seeing that whites are gathering together. And when they say white supremacism, then all that they do is they try to break our cohesion and break our morale. And something that I was looking at very closely recently was there have been a bunch of experiments, psychological experiments, on the conformity of people. And you'd be amazed how you can manipulate lots of people. You can manipulate the behavior of people. And there are proper experiments that have been conducted where you can see how you can make people change their behavior, and they'll do totally ridiculous things. And, you know, a lot of Jews are involved in psychology and that kind of stuff. And a lot of what Jews are using against us is psychological warfare and terrorism. And it's terror based on the psychology, and it's deliberate. It's definitely deliberate. They go at this. And, you know, some of these Jews in some of these movements, some of these Jewish movements, I've come across Jews who are actually professors of psychology who are in some of these movements, hey? And so that they are genuinely using those techniques against whites, that's for sure.
And like, what's the Frankfurt School all about? It's the long march to communism through this cultural Marxism, and that's what that's all about, the Frankfurt School. And then there's all these other institutes like the Tavistock Institute, and I mean, there's all kinds of these organizations. That's all, yes, Jewish run, Jewish operated. And they, you're right, they are very predominant in the fields of psychology and psychiatry. So they know us better than we know us.
Yes. To them, we are like cattle, and they know how to mess with the cattle, and they do. And, you know, Monica, the more I look at Jews, I see them, I like the parasite concept of Jews. It's totally true. They need to live off us, and they are most successful on European people. They try with blacks, and I've watched Jews working with blacks in South Africa and other races, and the Jews are actually nowhere near as successful with other races as they are with whites. They try,
you know what,
let me tell you,
other
races, but they don't do well.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you why they don't do as well. Have you ever tried to indoctrinate your pet hamster? You see, you can't, because the brain isn't that big. You know, it's like trying to indoctrinate your goldfish. I mean, come on.
Alfred, that is good. Okay, next topic. Back to the Buddhist.Partei. Alex, the Buddhist.Partei put out a video about Christianity and its role in the destruction of whites. I actually saw it a couple of years ago, and I was thinking about it recently, and I couldn't find it. And then when I went to their website, my goodness, there it was. I want to download it, and I'm going to send you a link.
Yeah, we'd like to see that.
You are going to love it. You're going to love it. And the next thing, the guy from the Buddhist.Partei, he gave me some of the books that he's written over the years. And he tackles all kinds of topics that that these normal Afrikaners are too afraid to talk about. And he and I had some frank discussions. Like I was even talking to him about family stuff, and I said to him, you know, men and women, you know, boys and girls, they do naughty things, and they do all kinds of things because we're animals. And we can't, and our animal instincts make us do this and make us do that. And, you know, sometimes out of these things, there's some naughty things that happen. But that's human. But I'll tell you why that topic came up was he brought up the topic of that if a girl got pregnant and she wasn't married, then there was a whole stigma around her. And he said that was a bad thing because she's got a child, and the child is of value to our race. It's one of us. So he's against that kind of stigma. And then I went and told him some stuff about my own personal family. Well, I said to him, I agree with you. You know, if a girl gets pregnant and she's going to have a child, you know, don't ask questions. If the child's a white child, don't ask questions. It's one of us, you know. Because Hitler, my understanding is that Hitler did the same thing with girls in Germany. If a girl was pregnant and she had a child, I think they gave her a house. They gave her a place. They didn't have a stigma against the girl. She's got a child, let it be, you know. If she's married, and if they're married and they have other children, great. You know, then they get other benefits, but it's important that there be children. And I like that approach. He's realistic. He's practical. You know, don't worry too much about, you know, this is a place where morality now comes in and messes with the animal side of things. And rather let there be children. Children are a thing that we don't have enough of.
Yeah, and, well, the farther north you go, the more realistic or biological the Aryans always were. The Nordics never quite went in for that stuff the way the Southern Germans and the other ones did, really. But Hitler also overtly practiced eugenics, both the negative and the positive way. The negative way, getting rid of people who were truly defective so they weren't a burden on the rest of them. Positive way, with Lebensborn, having qualified men breed with highly qualified women, producing even a member of ABBA, the singing group. And it worked. That's what horrifies Catholics and Christians, because they can't stand that biology is an actual thing in humans and you have to respect the laws of nature. More than anything else, Hitler paid attention to nature.
Yes,
and
that
horrifies the Christian approach, because it's the exact opposite. They just subsidize defectives, you know, and subsidize what you subsidize, you get more of. And if you're paying people to be bums or single moms or whatever, you are going to get more of that. Now, in Germany, obviously, Hitler is aware it's slightly different. But here in the USA, they've ripped up families with a bunch of other laws. Hitler's laws were pretty much good and successful. And they would give, you know, couples who had children, they'd make it for, so they could get houses on easier terms with loans that would be
25% off of the mortgage payment with each child. So by fourth child, you'd have your house for free.
Yeah. And so they're working in favor of white families rather than against them, as we have today, where the top, the Jews, are stealing all the money. So the younger generation can hardly even get a house or even dream of getting a house. Whereas in America, you used to be able to buy a little bit of land and get a house with just one ordinary salary. But the government has gotten so huge and so Jewed that whites are screwed and they feel like they can't. How are we going to have kids when we can't afford it? But it's pretty terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah. Anyway. So the Buddhist Art Partei have got a particular little program that they want to try and build up. They want to do something to help young couples have children and to reduce their medical expenses. So that's something that they would like to do. And so I want to drive people there and we see if we can build up some support and see if something can be done there. They are also against, they're against things like the pill and contraception. And they say that, you know what, especially us in South Africa, we really need more children. All whites everywhere are having too few children anyway. But we, especially for our tiny population, children should be a number one priority. And Kun was saying to me that if we do succeed in any way in having more children and the government or somebody then tries to stop us, then that's genocide. Then we fight them on that. Because there's nothing to say that we can't have children. The blacks are having children left, right, and center. Blacks don't even care. I mean, blacks don't even care about who's married, who's not married. The married men have children with unmarried women. The married women have children with freaking men that aren't their husbands. Blacks just do anything. But whites are so bound by rules. And the rules are working against us, and we need, and money especially is working against us, and we need to find a way to break out of that so that we can have a higher birth rate. But
well, Jan, what's the fertility rate? I've never seen this in Orania. I bet it's higher than the other white average in South Africa, and probably higher than white rate most of the place around the world, but I've never seen the graphic, I'm guessing.
I have no idea. I need to contact someone there. But what I want to tell you as well, among the books that Kun wrote, is there's a book in Afrikaans, and it's called 2194, and it's basically like a revolutionary diary. And when I started browsing through it, it's basically the Afrikaans version of Dr. William Pierce's Turner Diaries. He's gone and written a much smaller Afrikaans version of the same kind of thing. And the year is far too far in the future, 2194. That's 150 years from now. That's bullshit. It needs to move into the next 10 years. But anyway, so I quite like the Buddhist Art Partei and the people there. And so I'm going to be seeing what I can do to... And also, because Kuhn has been around in the past, he's willing to talk about things that happened in the past that nobody else wants to talk about. So I'm hoping that I can get him to do some shows so that we can really find out a bunch of things that happened 20 and 30 and 40 years ago that people have already forgotten, and that's not been written down. There's some very interesting stuff that he was a part of and knew of. So anyway, so that's the Buddhist Art Partei, and I think you'll like them.
Okay, quite interesting. Yeah, see if you can get that. Any video on the Christian thing would be interesting and how it didn't work. And you've got to bring to people's mind, like, here's the Christian approach to dealing with Jews, and here's what this implies. And then you've got all kinds of history showing that that's the case, that it's leaving whites open to being preyed on by Jews. But one of the ways Jews operate is through sexual perversion, sexual liberation as political control, as it has been put. And one of their newer fads that is establishing legs is transsexualism. And Monica's got some stuff she wants to say about that. And you all have seen how this is metastasized. The minute they got queer marriage, they turned to transsexualism. And it's just grown horrifyingly.
Thank you, Alex, for the segue into this topic. So, we know we are in a war. Well, some of us know, and many people don't recognize it because it looks a little bit different than what they're accustomed to seeing in the movies with, you know, guns and tanks and bombs. But we are clearly in a war, and the Jews have been attacking us on all fronts, whether that's, you know, through the skies, the poisoning, the weather manipulation, the chemtrails is what I'm talking about, or through the, the list is huge, you know, but the most recent thing over the last 3 years was the COVID and then the bioweapon that people were coerced into rolling up their sleeves to take this willingly, this bioweapon, again, through psychological warfare, the deception of it all and fear and whatnot. And now what is really at the front, this war on us, the very front of this battle against us, is this transgenderism. And it has taken on such an insane level that we can hardly even believe that this is real. If we had been juxtaposed into this situation just from 15 years ago or so, we would think, no, this is not possible. And going after the children prepubescent, and also alienating the children from their parents. So in schools, and we've got a battle going on right now in Canada, in New Brunswick, where there's a battle between, you know, the school board and the government and the people. The people have you know, stood up and say, wait a minute, no way, you can't do this, and being, you know, letting the schools do things to the children without the parents' knowledge or consent. And then now they couch it in terms of, oh, it's for the children's safety that we have to keep this secret from the parents, because the parents might be non-accepting of their children who think that they might be in the wrong body. And so we better keep it secret from the parents, because otherwise these children, if they have unaccepting or non-accepting parents, these children might end up homeless and on the streets. And all this is how they coach it, like when they report on this in the mainstream media. And I listened to one of these reports on the Communist Broadcast Corporation the other day, that's the CBC. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, if I had not yet woken up to what's going on in the world, and if I did not yet come from a clear-eyed view and see this, I could see how people get taken in. They are so clever in how they describe things in the mainstream media. Really all about the safety of these children, right? That you know, and then they'll trot out some story of children who ended up homeless and they're just out on the streets and they're, you know, little kids basically. Well, first of all, I think they make it up, that those stories. And really it's just the way they twist things to make it all like it's about the safety of the children. Meanwhile, you've got professors being fired for actual factual statements like there are two genders. A biology professor, this was in the States somewhere, so Alex, you probably heard about that one. You know, we used to call this genital mutilation in Africa when, you know, they would mutilate the clitorises of little girls and whatnot. And now this is pushed onto our children and hidden from parents. There was a case of a billboard. Some people put up a big billboard saying woman, noun, adult human female. They got this out of the dictionary. They just put the definition of woman out of the dictionary. Literally, it said woman, noun, adult human female. This billboard was taken down and called hate speech. This is where we have gotten to now, that you just take a dictionary definition of what a woman is and they call it hate speech. So in summary, I would say that they are in the stage now where they are reversing life itself or inverting life itself. So what do you get if you invert life itself, like male to female, female to male, or any other of the 37 genders or 600 gender or 6 million genders, whatever. So you get death. This is a death cult. This is like, in my view, the final battle. But when I said that to Alfred yesterday on the telephone, he said, oh, no, next it'll be, you know, a goat for president or something like that. I mean, you know, the animal stuff. So really, that's where we're
that
at.
That could
right
happen.
Well,
maybe
yeah,
it's already happened.
Yeah. Can I just interject, Monica? See, one thing, Monica, that these new ever more rapid succession laws and nonsense that they're imposing on us, every single wave of this nonsense is generating ever more people that are flying out of this matrix, you know, as enemies of the matrix kind of thing, if enemies of the system. And what is left is the absolute sludge, the very bottom, the very dirt. And that's why our prediction here, and ever more people that I'm communicating with here, really think this is the year. This is the year. This is going to really flip, and things that we cannot possibly see yet and predict accurately will be happening this year, because it is like you said, Monica, it is a death cult, an absolute death cult that is now in its final death plunge over the cliff, if you will, because you cannot get any more bizarre and any more insane. And that people that are getting thrown out of it and start to wake up, that which may have taken us years and months and years to sort of, you know, piece by piece come out of the matrix, they are now coming out and they can comprehend everything in a much, much shorter time than it took us, because it's becoming ever more difficult not to see it. In fact, it's becoming impossible not to see that it's insane.
And Alfred, I think that half of the population should automatically be screaming and yelling and up in arms about it. And that would be the women, because they are erasing women with this transgenderism. When you have men competing against women in sports and taking all the prizes, recently there was the case of the swimmer who the woman tied with this tranny man, and it was to the hundredth of a second she tied with him, and they still gave the trophy to the man because they said, and they didn't even flip a coin about it. They just said, well, you know, there's photographers here and this, you know, we have to give it, we're going to give it to the tranny, the man that pretends it's a woman. And these, so, and of course, most women are too afraid to speak out about it, but they're just in rage about it. But if they speak out about, oh, they lose their scholarships or this or that, whatever, but this is going to change too. I mean,
very, you know, Monica, that's excellent. I'm glad you brought up that point, because what this illustrates is how just with the, just a thing like that, it enrages so many people who were until then thinking, oh, this won't affect me. Well, it is affecting them. And like you said, that's half the population right now in one blow. It should be enraged, absolutely enraged. Yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Jan.
No, that's fine. I totally agree with you guys and what you're saying. Alex, I just want to ask you something before I hit into the Africa stuff. Einsatzgruppen, the issue of the Einsatzgruppen has come up. People have asked me about it. It's something I've looked at in the past, and every time I go and I Google, and then I just see Einsatzgruppen Holocaust, Einsatzgruppen Holocaust, Holocaust mobile mobile gas chambers, and then it's just it's just Einsatzgruppen Holocaust. My German friend in South Africa, he says that we don't understand the term Einsatzgruppen. His take on it was that Einsatzgruppen wasn't a specific unit, but that it's just a general reference to any German troops. But what can you tell me about Einsatzgruppen?
I believe they were SS, and they were Einsatzgruppen means group. Einsatz means insertion group. So they're formed, SS, I think there are four of them formed to insert behind the front line in Eastern Europe to clean up the partisans, i.e. the Jew commies and their people who were sabotaging their effort from behind the front line, insertion groups. And what has happened in a more general political sense is, first they used to claim under the umbrella of the big lie, Holocaust, they used to claim, oh, there were gas chambers in Germany. That was revealed to be a lie. Then they claimed, oh, well, actually, they were over in Poland, which was behind the Iron Curtain where you couldn't get any data. And then once that was revealed to be a lie, you know, the numbers dropping at Auschwitz and the fact revealed that there were no gas chambers anywhere. Then in the last few years, they've been coming forward with, oh, well, the Holocaust is really all these SS insertion groups who were killing millions of Jews, like I said, partisans or whatever. So it's part of the Holocaust lie as the shifty Semites try to come up with some new reason to sustain the bogus 6 million. And of course, as Aryans, we know there's a war going on. The Jews were all fighting against the Nazi machine, as were a lot of other people over there. And it's a war. So, but yeah, SS, it's just an insertion group. Right, Einsätze, insert. You insert this group, and they weren't more than I think like 1,500 per group, but that's about the extent of my knowledge. I've just followed the politics of it, which is that they're starting to pretend, well, this was the real Holocaust. It was never talked about. And you know, there's always a new feature, new wrinkle of the Holocaust. They're rolling out from year to year as the reality of it becomes clear. Its nature as a great lie and wartime atrocity propaganda that was picked up mainly by the Jews in the 70s and really turned into something gigantic later on. But it's all a lie. Now, okay. You know, they did shoot Jew commies. I mean, you got Jew commies and you're not valid to shoot commissars in the Russian army. Give me a break. But they'll do the usual claim that the Germans were rounding up innocent citizens, i.e. Jew commies, and shooting them. It's just garbage, but it's in the line of the other Holocaust stuff falling apart.
Okay, excellent. So it's basically special forces fighting partisans, and anyway, partisans were basically terrorists behind lines.
I believe they were SS, so special forces, I don't know. Yeah, the SS, I guess, is, I don't know if they would technically be special forces or not, but they're an elite selected group. And they formed like four groups specifically to fight partisans behind the front lines, is my understanding. I could be wrong, but I think that's basically the idea. And they were not gigantic, you know, they're like 1,500 apiece. So you're talking about maybe 6,000 people, right?
Okay. Yeah, well, if you go behind enemy lines, that's basically what the special air services
do in
Britain, etc.
No, they're behind their own front line. That's what I'm saying. They're cleaning up partisans who are attacking
them
from
here. Oh, behind their lines, their own lines, yes.
Now, it's the same
and
type
by
of
partisans, you mean the communists, right?
The people who are attacking them, who are working for the USSR communists, or
exactly.
themselves communists, or whatever, who are attacked. Either you're on the side of the Aryans, or you're on the side of the Jew commies, basically. So
if
they move through an area, you might have, you know, Poles getting together. They don't have to be Jews, but and maybe they could be just people who don't want Germans in their country as well, is what they'd hype up. But basically, the basic war going on here is between the Jew Aryans and the Jew, or the Aryans and the Jews, or the who are leading the communists in the USSR and the gangster takeover. And Germans are trying to clear this problem out of Europe. And so as they move over area, some of the people there might resist it and start sabotaging them from behind. That's what the SS, the insertion forces were sent out to deal with, behind their own lines.
Special forces
would do special things in the front lines or behind enemy lines, but this is behind their own lines. But it would be the same type of person because they're an elite people in the SS. The SS has very rigorous qualifications, not just physical and intellectual, but moral, right?
Okay,
as well as theological.
Just something I want to insert there. According to, let's call it, Western rules of war, it was accepted in World War I and World War II that anybody who operates behind the other one's enemy lines may be shot, period. That was allowed.
Usually what the distinction is if you're doing army stuff and you're not wearing army uniforms, you're pretty much legally liable to be executed if you're caught. So if my name is Sam Grabowski, whether I'm a Jew or a Pole, and I don't like Germans or I don't like Aryans or I'm overtly a commie, and I get my pal Jude Wasinski, and we say, hey buddy, let's go out at 1 a.m. and let's fucking blow up this railway or blow up this bridge. That's partisan activity. If you're caught and you're not wearing an army uniform, you're just dressed as a civilian. If they catch you, boom, they just shoot you, and that's legally valid as far as I know. That's like the accepted international standard for war. Whereas if you're on the front lines and you're fighting and you're wearing a uniform of the Soviet Union or whatever, and I'm German and we capture you, you're not just allowed to basically execute them. That would be more of a war crime. You'd have to take them prisoner unless you're in a really special situation. I think that's the distinction.
I totally agree with you, Alex. Thanks very much for that. Yeah, so at least
well,
now we,
yeah,
at
it's,
least
it's
now we
factual,
know what that is.
It's a factual question. It's not my opinion. It's to the extent of what I know. That's how it's factually regarded. You know, now, and of course, the Soviet Union, like rounding people up at Katyn and just shooting them. I mean, come on. We got to hear, there's this Holocaust of what the SS did trying to stamp out these citizens working to sabotage them from behind in conquered territory. I mean, come on. It's just another way to attack Aryans, basically, for trying to defend, for the gall of defending themselves and their race. Right?
Yeah. And just on a similar note, Winston Churchill was trying to do the same thing all across Europe. All across Europe. He was trying to get all those various partisans set up in every single country. So,
and
same,
he initiated
same
civilian
thing.
Bombing too. Civilian bombing through the air. You know, point. What's David, the writer, David Irving makes. You know, the Jews essentially paid off his debt to get him to civilian bomb the Germans to get the war going. So they're dirty, dirty people, and there has to be.
If we're talking about the rules of war, what would you call what rules of war were obeyed when the Jews did 9/11?
Deception works is the only rule they obey.
They're so-called best friends.
When you can't apply rules to people who don't respect and observe them themselves. Otherwise, you become a sucker and get destroyed, and that's exactly what's going on, as Alfred's been saying. The Jews don't observe anything except what works, and frankly, that's how nature accepts it. By way of deception is the Mossad and Israel's national motto. So they get these goy suckers, and it still works. They've got 300,000 Ukrainians killed fighting for Jews, and who cares if they call themselves Nazis? I mean, they're fighting for a Jewish agenda, and they're dying. It's absolutely insane. And we keep, as long as we keep being suckers, they'll be willing to keep making money off of us while they genocide us. So we have to up our game, as much as I hate that stupid expression. We have to get less dumb. We have to get smarter. We have
to
fight for ourselves.
Alex, that's why I noticed myself that my disdain, my absolute rage with people who pretend to be too stupid to figure this out is increasing every single day. Because like you say, this is about our survival as a species, as a race, as a species. And anybody feigning, you cannot even feign the level of ignorance anymore that you need to be at not to understand that something is very bad, foul.
You know, an example in that line that always makes me just laugh is these stupid conservatives always have Quran verses to prove how evil the Muslims are. But my God, you would never find one of them citing that verse from the Talmud, which is absolutely there, and absolutely their historical principle is hating all other races. And the fake opposition, the right wing, the religious, that's what gets between people and understanding. So you got left wing anti-white brainwashing coming out of TV and all the mass media and all the politicians, and then the stupid faux opposition rhetoric coming out of Fox News and the right wing and the churches. And together, they're all promoting ultimately the same thing. And that's what people have to be made to understand, that only a racial response is true opposition to all the crap we hate, like the transsexualism, which I enjoyed the earlier discussion. And I would only add that, and I didn't make this point, someone else made the point, that crap sterilizes people, right? You can't change sex. They're sterilizing white kids. And as Monica said, they're using the abortion model. They're going behind the parents' back to try to sterilize white children and telling them that any little psychological problem they have can be rectified with this expensive, profitable surgery and these expensive, profitable, Jew-profitable pills. And then they use the inverted terminology claiming that's genocide if you reject their gender-affirming care. No, it's sexual mutilation and sterilization of white children. It's not non-whites doing that stuff.
Thanks for pointing that out. They're reverse language again. They call it gender-affirming while they mutilate the children. And this does tie very well.
Always invert what they're doing. Always.
And it ties well into what you said about not enough white children. This is exactly also one of their goals, is to have less white children. I mean,
that's why they promote homosexuality. It's not that they're all going to, what do you think they're going to? No, they're not all going to turn gay, but each little percentage adds up very quickly, right? So they get a percentage of transgender, a percentage homosexual, a percentage that become, my fur babies, and they never have children, or larger percent, I'm a career woman, I'm not going to have kids, families are horrible and awful, and it's too expensive, and I can't, you know, whatever they can do psychologically to get another percentage not to form stable families and twist all the laws so that there's reasons not to do it.
Guilt about the climate change. There are actual groups and organizations in various countries where they sign pledges. These young people sign pledges never to have babies to save the planet because of climate change. I'm dead serious.
Yeah, no, she's right. And they always have exclusively white actors in all that propaganda, whereas everywhere else it would be all blacks. But anything else that would be racially destructive, why all of a sudden it's all whites? These assholes will turn around and say, your population is elderly and dying. You need to import 50 million Africans.
I know. That's the whole thing. As we sort of held back with the size of our families because of environmental concerns, we did not do it so we can be flooded by the surplus niggers of the world, which are infinite because they breed like fucking cockroaches. I mean, I love cockroaches, but I don't like them breeding in my kitchens, you know, like in living in my kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, and that and this has been going on for decades. They started hyping this environmental stuff at least back in the 70s with Earth Day and zero population growth. It was a huge thing back then. And I have firsthand seen in my own relatives that it had effects, that they really believed that, like, and I'm not even talking religious people. They believed that having more than like two children is like immoral somehow.
Absolutely. Well, look at Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb Jew. You know, that's a Jew who wrote that to scare us all about the population. We're affected in our own family. I hate to say it. We are affected in our own family. And all you're right. It's in all white families. We feel guilty about, you know, harming anything, whether it's nature, the environment, or harming others. And that's in our nature to be empathic and caring. And this is what the Jews have used against us.
They've used our trusting nature to fill our heads with lies. It is what it is. And we have to, I guess it's an, if you look at it in the largest picture, it's a natural force that's forcing us to become less trusting and a little more sophisticated. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is Charlie Bucket like honesty and integrity. But we'll get
nice again after we've thrown them out and done away with all these problems. We'll get nice again. We'll be nice again.
we
intellectually have to understand that our best points can only flourish in an all-white environment, because otherwise they have become a threat to our racial existence when we're around these comparatively more deceptive, more dishonest, more violent races, right? We have to use our brains to understand that and use our will to execute what we know to be the solution, which is what we're all here to tell you listening about and explain it.
Well, Alex, I just want to chat a bit about Africa and Russia and Putin, because there's a bunch of stuff that's come up since we did a show last. There's been a lot of activity here in Africa, and the Russians are popping up in various places. I discovered that in the Central African Republic, up there in the Congo, that there's also been some Russian involvement there since 2018. The difference between the Russians and the Europeans and Americans in Africa is that America and Europe send medicine, food, and they lend money, but the Russians are much more practical. The Russians work with the blacks simply on the basis of weaponry. The Russians will sell or give weaponry to any blacks who want it, and then they strike some deals. And the blacks actually love this. The blacks love the Russians. They love them to bits because. For them, that's actually what they really want. The black leaders and the black warlords, etc., they just want weapons. And they can't get those weapons from America and from Europe, but they get it from the Russians. So there has been some involvement of the Russians arming one of the sides in the Central African Republic. It's a smallish war, not a big deal. But the one that really burst onto the scene about a month and a half ago is Sudan. And Sudan has had various civil wars going on for quite a long time now, but it's always ended in some kind of half agreement. The southern part of it seceded, etc. But the really interesting thing is that in April, Wagner went to Sudan and they made contact with the RSF, which is the smaller of the two armies that were fighting in Sudan, and there was peace between these two groups. Anyway, Wagner actually dropped off some weaponry, trained some blacks, and the next thing is there's been a huge outbreak of violence as the smaller side and the bigger side clash, and they've been doing a lot of fighting in their capital city of Khartoum. And the scale of the fighting that's been going on now, because these blacks have been fighting each other for a long time, they've got some relatively well-established armies and generals. So anyway, these blacks are fighting each other like crazy, but between you and me, When blacks fight like crazy and they fire lots and lots of rounds, not many people get killed. Okay.
Who are the forces doing battle there? I don't quite understand that.
In a basic nutshell, it's a military force that represents what used to be the government, and then the RSF. It stands for Rapid Support Force or something. The RSF are basically the guys from the south. I think they were the guys who'd seceded. And the South actually has got quite a lot of, the South has actually got good mineral resources. I'm not sure if they've got oil or something. But anyway, the bottom line is there's a lot of fighting there now. And this fighting has drawn the attention of America. And this war has got the potential to maybe start spreading. Because Egypt might get involved and Libya might get... Libya is already supporting... I think Libya supports the RSF, I think. And Egypt supports the other side. So this war is quite intensive for an African war. It's actually very intensive for an African war. And the main thing is it has got the potential for becoming a bigger conflict... And it might start dragging in other players, maybe even some European players, etc. So
yeah, okay, yeah, but
an interesting
is it an inter-black battle, or is it? I mean, ideologically, is this a Muslim thing versus others, or what? What? It's just blacks who want to rule.
You know what it really is?
Money and minerals and stuff.
It's actually a fight between two black generals. So
okay.
Basically two black guys now having a power struggle. They'd previously thrown out the government and they'd agreed to like work together. Now they're at each other. And
all right, so either way the winner's gonna be a nigger. Useless nigger.
That's what it is. But
all right, we don't need to worry about that too much. But they were saying Wagner that just triumphed in Bakhmut and killed umpteen thousands, tens of thousands of Ukrainians might go into Africa at some point. I don't know what side they.
Yes, so Wagner is on the side of RSF. Wagner is the side has been supplying them and training them, and it looks to me like if it wasn't for Wagner, that this war wouldn't even have gotten off the ground. So what this could be is this could be a new Russian front. That's what I'm saying, and it could be a front that could get very irritating for America and for Europe. So it could be very interesting to watch. There have been there was a war in Africa in the 1990s that I've spoken about a little bit. It was what I called Africa's World War, where 22 African nations fought each other for 5 years or so, and they killed like about 5 million blacks got killed in this black on black fight that you've never heard of. Well, this Sudan thing might be the next. It might be like the next African world war. We need to just keep watching this one. That it's got potential for growth. So we'll keep an eye on Sudan. Central African Republic also has some Wagner in there, but it's a much smaller thing. The really big story, the two really big stories, is the Russian ship that came to South Africa. There was a huge Russian ship that came to South Africa in December or so. And when this ship came, I noticed already that our biggest Afrikaans news website, News24, actually put up a video. They put up a video 6 months ago, and I watched it, and they said, "What is this Russian ship doing here in Simonstown?" Now, how South Africa works is that Simonstown is our main naval harbor. So it's a military harbor. It's not for normal ships. So it's a military harbor. And this Russian ship came and docked there for quite a while. And I myself couldn't understand, why is News24 pointing to this Russian ship in Simonstown? And this was done 6 months ago. And now suddenly what happened was a couple of weeks ago, the American ambassador, who by the way is black, as you can guess, American ambassador goes and has a press conference, and he says that The Russian ship unloaded weaponry and loaded weaponry. And he's willing to bet he said something like he's willing to bet his life on it and that they've got the evidence for this. And that caused a huge uproar in South Africa. The government denied it. But this thing is very interesting, and lots of news has come out, so I'm going to attempt to try and summarize this as best I can. The main evidence there seem to be multiple sources for the evidence that something big went down here. The one set seems to come from Afrikaans sources. News 24, as well as other groups in South Africa, all of them Afrikaans, seem to have been spying on that ship, and they had information about what went on that ship. They seem to even have been spying on it day and night, and they were saying that at night there would be activity where they'd be unloading and loading stuff every evening on this ship. But the question is what? Nobody could see what it was. There's a guy who's in charge of the DA. The DA is the Democratic Alliance. Basically, the DA is South Africa's globalist, Jewish, totally Jewish-controlled liberal political party. You could say it's like the Democrats of South Africa. Now, the leader of that is an Afrikaans guy called Steenkamp. Steenkamp took on the president of South Africa, the black Jew, Ramaphosa. He took him on in the cabinet, and he said to him that he must come clean, that there is definitely evidence that there were weapons loaded and unloaded. Ramaphosa has been ducking and diving and trying to say that nothing happened, etc. There's been a whole bunch of things that's been going on. The bottom line is that these Afrikaans people are sticking to their guns. They are saying that not only was something unloaded, but something was loaded. There is another Jew newspaper, the Sunday Times. It claims that there were machine guns. It claims that only weapons were unloaded. And its claim about the weapons that were unloaded, as well as the types of weapons that they describe, it doesn't make sense that those weapons would be for South Africa. There's absolutely nothing that the South African military is doing that needs those weapons. So what I'm not sure is if something was unloaded, whether it was unloaded for South Africa or whether it was unloaded for somebody else in Africa, and that those weapons might be going somewhere else, you know, whether it's going to Sudan or wherever it's going. So that is one possibility. South Africans were making tons of jokes about this thing that we sent Russia weapons. You should have seen all the jokes that were coming up. People were even making videos where Putin is talking, and then you see subtitles where Putin says, "Oh, thank you so much to South Africa for the Mausers, like the Mausers from 100 years ago." But what I really liked was the Biltong and the Rusks, and you know, people were just mocking this like crazy. But there are things that might come from South Africa that could be useful. What people don't realize is that we've got some companies. We've got quite a few private companies that actually produce weaponry in South Africa. And there's even a German company. There's a German company in South Africa that also produces a very specialized type of weaponry. And I even have a friend who works for a company that produces drones here in South Africa. They aren't combat drones, but they're like spy drones. They look exactly like those American drones, but they're just used for spying. Now, one thing, we've got a German military specialist here in South Africa, and he was saying that there's nothing that we have that we could have given the Russians. But there was another military guy who said that it could be that we have got components, special components that we could give the Russians that could help the Russians, because the Russians were looking for special types of special types of like motherboards and special types of computer type stuff that they can't get due to sanctions. And either we could buy the stuff, we could buy the stuff and give it to the Russians and help them to bypass sanctions, or we might have components that are similar, but if we give them to the Russians could modify them and use them for their stuff. So there could be something that has gone down, and the Afrikaners are very firm on this matter. The American ambassador said that U.S. intelligence would provide evidence directly to the South African government to prove that they know exactly what was put on those ships, and I haven't heard anything further. So this has been a hell of a story, and the government's been trying to quieten it down, and it looks like they've been pretty successful at it. But the whites are the ones that are saying this was very suspicious. Another thing was that the ship, they were monitoring the ship from the time it came down, I think through the Black Sea or whatever. They were saying that the ship also behaved strangely. The ship should have docked at Cape Town first. It didn't go through customs. It switched off its transponders so that it couldn't be tracked. There was lots of weird stuff about the ship. Another friend of mine tells me that since then there's been another Russian ship, but I haven't heard anything in the media about it. The final thing I want to say is that Putin, BRICS is meeting in South Africa in August, and we've had Lavrov here, and the blacks absolutely love Lavrov, and they love the Russians, they're very tight, and our foreign minister or whatever turned around and apparently told Putin that Putin doesn't have to attend in person because you know that the ICC, the International Criminal Court, the International Criminal Court has issued a warrant for Putin's arrest for all those other, you know, for whatever junk, okay, which I'm not interested in. But the bottom line is the International Criminal Court has issued a warrant for his arrest. Now, South Africa is a signatory to that. The ICC has asked South Africa previously to arrest somebody. There was a guy called Al Bashir, and he was supposed to be arrested in South Africa like 10 years ago or a couple of years ago, and South Africa did not arrest him, even though South Africa was a signatory to the ICC. And South Africa has been trying to pull out of the ICC. It's the government was trying to pull out of it, but then it seemed that there was like some kind of, I don't know, American or something political stuff going on, and the blacks then stopped withdrawing from the ICC. But the bottom line is that nobody can force the South African government to arrest Putin. You know, they can't like put sanctions on South Africa or do something to force them to arrest Putin. But what South Africa did try to do was they said to Putin that he could attend, like virtually, you know, through, let's say, Skype or whatever. But Putin actually rejected that. Putin rejected that, and Putin said he's going to physically come to South Africa. So Putin is going to be in South Africa in August. And so he's going to be here for BRICS. So he's going to cause quite a stir.
That takes some balls on Putin's part. I think the U.S. is realizing they've lost in Ukraine, and they may try to go after him. What kind of an American presence in general is there in South Africa?
American and Europe presences are not things that you can see in the open. But I will tell you how it works, and this is based on my time when I did stuff with the Zimbabweans and when I dealt with that friend of mine, Dr. Chris Jordan, who was in military intelligence. The way that America and the West work is through their embassies. America's got very potent embassies, I must tell you. Your embassies have got military people here. You've got military people even in neighboring states like Botswana. Every year, American troops come to Botswana and they do exercises in Botswana, in the neighboring state of Botswana. But Europe and America have have their embassies here, and what they have behind the scenes is they've got like a social group for the European, for let's call it Western embassies. And they get together, and all of them are busy spying on South Africa, and they all exchange information all the time. When I was involved in the land seizures of the farmers in Zimbabwe, and I was dealing with blacks, I got blacks, and I would get blacks to tell me what was going on. I'd get information from the blacks, and I would write up reports, and I would submit those. I would get the blacks in touch with the American government, and I arranged that for quite a few years. And so I actually dealt directly with the American military attaché, who's a very senior military, who's the most senior military officer. And I would put the military attaché and the blacks together, and they would, and my reports would go with the blacks. But later, when the government was harassing me, I went to the American military attaché in person, and I said to him, he must help me because they are coming after me. They were threatening me in all kinds of ways. People were phoning me and telling me to shut my website down, and all kinds of things were happening. And it was very interesting. I must tell you that America and Europe have got a much more powerful diplomatic role in South Africa than any of you realize. And the way that they do it is with their economic power. South Africa, like something like 42% of South Africa's trade is with Europe and America. Whereas Russia's trade with South Africa is less than 0.5%. So even though the blacks were put in, were backed by the Russians and put in power by the Russians, Russian economic influence in South Africa, Russian and Chinese economic influence is minor. Most of our economy is actually driven by Europe, actually. Europe
so
is very powerful.
How's your trade with China?
It's
minor?
It's probably a lot more than with Russia, but it's not as, I don't think it's as powerful as with Europe, eh? Europe has got factories. The Europeans have got factories and stuff run in South Africa that we build cars in South Africa for Europe, for example. We do lots of stuff that is only European, British, etc. Europe has got very powerful, Europe and Britain have got very powerful influence on South Africa. Now, one of the things that can happen, let me tell you what can happen, is America has got a special agreement with South Africa called AGOA, A-G-O-A. It's I can't remember exactly what the acronym stands for, but it basically allows South Africa total access to the American market. Total access to the American market with like absolutely minimal trade barriers. Now, AGOA expires in 2025. So there is already talk that if the South African government pisses off America, that America might not renew AGOA, and that could give us quite a hit from that. So all this stuff that the blacks are doing that's pro-Russian. Remember also earlier this year, South Africa had naval exercises with Russia and China. That was already a big no-no with the U.S. government. So all this stuff that South Africa is doing, it's really pissing off the U.S. government. Make no mistake that there are meetings unfortunately, there are meetings behind closed doors, and we do not know and will never know what communications go on between those sides. But I can tell you from my time when I dealt with the American military attaché, let me tell you, America's got a lot of – America knows everything that's going on. Don't be fooled.
Okay. Well, that's in the context of this BRICS, which is really growing and expanding and attracting. It's going to have like 80 more members join, I believe. And one of the BRICS would be South Africa, right? And they're trying to build a system outside the U.S. where they moralize and steal your money and demand that you become democratic, which means essentially vaunting trannies and homosexuals and Jews over everybody else and enslaving the rest of the population to pay for all their perversion. And so that's probably explains why a lot of the South Africans and the other people look at, hey, these are more honest people. We can do money with them. Of course, you've got the ties from the old communists supporting the ANC, which would be a reason not to like Russia. But Russia is not communist any longer. And arguably, the Chinese aren't really either. Interesting. And that's a perspective. We never hear anything about South Africa really in the United States any longer. Like I've said, they lost interest, just like they lost interest after the black majority got power. That was their goal.
Something I forgot to tell you, I discovered while I was going through all these different discussions about Russia and South Africa and all that, I discovered that the African National Congress, the ruling party of South Africa, that one of their big funders is an oligarch in Russia that I'd never known of. So I heard that recently.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, again, Putin basically, they were after Yeltsin, under Yeltsin, and trying to go forward, they're trying to steal everything that Russia has, which is a lot of natural resources. And Putin put a stop to that. That was kind of his point. And that's why there's a lot of Jews don't like him, and they're opposing him. They want to continue stealing from Russia, and they were going to try to subvert it through Ukraine, and that's now essentially failed. Maybe we discuss that next month, but this month Russia captured Bakhmut, and however significant that might be, the significance of it is, I mean, geostrategically, the significance of it is that Ukraine poured loads and loads and loads of its brigades in there, and supposedly about 70% of 40% of its brigades were destroyed in Bakhmut. So they're pretty desperate for manpower, and now even the Poles are starting to want Zelensky to wrap it up, but he may well end up either dead or probably more likely fleeing with his stolen billions to Miami or somewhere else. That's the other big thing that's gone on, really, that we haven't talked about this show. But we probably gotten to about where we need to get for this show. Anyone have any last words or any wrap up?
Alex,
final thoughts, I should say.
My final wrap up, now that you mentioned Zelensky, I've come across something else. Another Jew, I'm not sure if it's a prime minister of Israel, there's actually a video that I found where he spoke about Zelensky was afraid that Putin would kill him, and somehow he checked out and then heard that Putin was never going to kill him, and then afterwards Zelensky was like, yeah, now I'm brave. It's very interesting.
And he's got to worry about his own guys, not Putin. He's a clown who's just getting their people killed. And excuse me a second. The Jews in America have been telling him, hey, you better go on the offensive because your goodwill's worn out. We've already sent you $100 billion, not counting what Europe sent you. You need to form a counteroffensive now or you're done. But they don't have any people left to do it with. They got old people. They waste their money. No, he's far likelier to get done in by his own angry people, although they should have already done it. They just sacrificed. McGregor's now saying like 300,000 lives from Ukraine have been killed. For no freaking reason, because the Jews, you know, staged a coup and then started attacking the Russian areas inside of Ukraine proper, and Putin put up with it for 8 years, finally started fighting back, and now he's they're winning. So I don't know how much longer it'll last, but they'll just keep grinding them down.
Zelensky is filling fulfilling his mission. It's to kill as many Ukrainians as possible so they can take over the country for a Khazaria, you know, Israel 2.0 or something like that. I mean, it's a meat grinder. The whole war is a meat grinder to kill as many white men as possible and make lots of money with weapons. And you know, it's just a huge casino.
Well, Well, yeah, but they'd like to ultimately walk away. But I mean, they've driven out so much of the population. It's almost reduced by half to 20 million or less from 35, 38 million.
Well, it's so the Jews from Israel can move up at sale prices. I mean, go in there and take everything over because the people that used to live there are dead. That's how they do it. I mean, that's the whole mission.
Again, we got to hold whites. Why are you fighting for this Jew?
Exactly. Wow. Exactly. Anybody fighting there?
What else can you say?
Yeah.
That really is. You know, your help. That's a Darwin Award to me. I mean, I wouldn't fight for Jew Zelensky, but what I would like to see is, hell, Ukraine has the best soil on earth, apparently, or equal to the best.
And that's what they're after. That's what the Jews want under their control.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not. We could argue about to what extent Jews have power in Russia, but clearly, you know, Prigozhin is under Putin. The Aryan is telling the Jew what to do. The Jew's been very good leading that military. And this is a good example of inversion. It was Russians who said they set up Bakhmut as a meat grinder to lure these people in and then destroy them. And the media flipped it and said, oh, no, it's Russian troops that are getting ground up in Bakhmut. Yeah. No. The Russians have done economy of force. They've been very, very careful. They wanted to just show enough power to get a negotiation. That didn't work. They've left without getting their people killed to a more defensible position, and now they've been meat grinding them ever since. So Ukraine, I mean, why white men continue to want to fight? And they are brave. They are heroic. They're in a situation where Russia's got a 10-to-1 artillery advantage. They're getting slaughtered. But don't question their bravery. But why? Goddamn. They can't learn anything from World War II. Don't fight for Jews. And the Jews murdered umpteen millions of white Ukrainians last century, starved them to death, tortured them. And yet they're still being suckers and fighting for them. It's fighting their Slavic brothers who there's barely even any differences between their languages. It's utterly absurd. But you know, I hope that, and there's plenty of things wrong with what Putin is doing in Russia, but I think more of the things he's done are right or good or objectively not anti-white, objectively good for white families. So I have to support that side of it. And I think he's going to, apart from what I think, he's going to win anyway. The media continue to completely lie about what's going on there. And it just remains to be seen what's going to happen the rest of this year. But Ukraine's not able to do anything. The Russians have tactical superiority. They have field superiority. They're more or less bombing it at will. And, you know, now they're going to up it and send some F-16s over there with the proviso they not be used to bomb Russia directly. But, I mean, it's utterly insane. The Jews do not have a reverse. They only have a forward, using as many white bodies as they can find to throw into this. So, you know, our message is to our fellow whites, quit serving the Jew. Start working for your own race. That's my last thought. I'll leave it to you guys.
Yeah, maybe we should wrap this thing up fairly quickly and see what happens in the next month. Yeah.
Yeah, Alfred,
Monica, you have a last thought?
Yeah, my last thought is to Alfred to ask them in 2 days from now, who and where is the harmed party? Because for any crime to have happened, there needs to be a harmed party, an injured party, or a victim of the crime. And just ask them who was harmed.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't think
good.
They will
yes.
be able to answer you.
No.
And so good luck with that. All the best to you.
Yes.
And
yes,
it was it was great talking to you all, and I'll sign off now. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Monica. And yeah, we do wish the best to Alfred in his battle with the officious Judeocracy there imposed on Germany, not what Germans naturally would support or come up with. We understand that. Jan, last thought from you?
No further last thoughts except to say good luck, Alfred. And Our race, they talk about Western democracy and that, you know, the Western democracies, well, it's fake democracy. It's not real democracy of whites for whites. What we need is real democracy where white people really say what they want to say. And it's becoming evident to me that In no Western country do the whites have real democracy. So I'm now all in favor of true democracy. And that's my final word.
Okay, good enough. Well, thanks everyone for listening to us today. This has been our May Team White with Alfred and Monica Schaefer and Jan in South Africa and me, Alex Linder, here in Northeast Missouri. Thanks for listening to us, and we'll be back with you again.
These are Alex Linder's websites, www.alexlinder.com, pieville.net, that's his Twitter type of website, www.vnnforum.com, you'll find a ton of information on there. And then his news website, which is www.kirksvilletoday.com. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.